This week's episode of the PFW Chicago Football Podcast is brought to you by Loot Crate. Head to lootcrate.com/Shaw. Use our promo code Shaw, S-H-A-W. You get $3 off your first crate. What is Loot Crate? Pray tell. You're going to get collectibles, apparel, and more from your favorite pop culture franchises delivered right to your doorstep every single month, including a free new t-shirt and pin. This month, the theme is primal, as Loot Crate is unleashing the beast of some pop culture's most ferocious franchises. That means Overwatch, Wolverine, Jurassic World, and Predator. So you'll get a monthly t-shirt and pin in your crate this month. lootcrate.com/Shaw. Use our promo code Shaw, S-H-A-W. You get $3 off your first crate. The Bears have some new players. Let's talk about them on this week's podcast. Welcome to PFW Chicago Football Podcast. I am Kevin Fishbane, your host. You can follow me on Twitter, of course, at KFishbane. Follow all of our Bears content at Bears_Insider. You can find all of our work at ProFootballWeekly.com/Bears. I have my producer with me, John Solly. You can follow him on Twitter at JSolly. Really fun episode for you today because there are new Bears. We want to kind of introduce you to them like we did last summer with the rookies. We've talked to beat writers that have covered some of the players that Ryan Pace signed last week. We're going to go through guys like Marcus Wheaton and Kendall Wright and Prince Amukamara and Deion Sims and Quinton Demps. If you missed it, I recommend going to last week's episode, going to the iTunes podcast store, wherever you get your podcasts, the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Last week, we talked to Roy Cummings before the Bears officially signed Mike Glennon, but go back there and listen to some of the things that Roy told us about Mike Glennon. You'll find it very informative. But this week, we're talking about all the other guys, so let's get right to the interviews, starting with Ryan O'Halloran, who covered Prince Amukamara last year with the Jacksonville Jaguars. To learn more about the Bears' new cornerback, Prince Amukamara, we bring in Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union, covers the Jaguars out there. And Ryan, before his season last year, I want to go back to free agency last March, because obviously Prince was not one of the big names that Jacksonville brought in. But what was the thought process when they did sign him last year? What was the reason Jacksonville brought him in last March?
Well, I think it was a signing of convenience for both sides. And from the Jaguars' perspective is they had a number one in Devon House that they thought maybe was probably more of a two. And they had Aaron Colvin, who was a number two, that they really thought was a nickel that could play inside. So the draft, you know, the projections on the draft, they thought Jalen Ramsey would be gone by the time they picked. So they signed Prince to a one-year deal. From Prince's perspective, it's a prove-it deal. The market didn't develop as he thought it would, sort of like this year. And he signed on and became a starter right away.
And from his play last season, obviously we heard a lot more about what Jalen Ramsey did. He had a terrific rookie season. How kind of would you evaluate the way Prince played last season?
Well, I think he was okay. He had no interceptions, but I have not probably given up a couple touchdowns. You know, they went to more of a off coverage instead of the press man they played the previous year. Because I mean, I think the coaches were just so afraid to get blown out of games and so afraid to get beat over the top. That's why Devon House didn't play a lot. So, yeah, I think Prince. The thing about Prince is he's a veteran, so you know he understands routes. He understands how to take the right angle. He understands how to interfere without interfering, so to speak. So. The big thing for him is he needs to put on his resume. He can make it through a full season. Missed the second and third games of the season with a hamstring, then played the rest of the way. So from that standpoint, you know, he was a successful year, 5 pass breakups. So, yeah, I just don't think he had a lot of chances to be around the ball, though.
And you mentioned that hamstring injury and injuries have been an issue for him throughout his career, but then he was able to play the final games. He had 12 starts on the year. Was there anything in his play that maybe told you the Jaguars would be interested in looking into bringing him back at all?
I thought if the cornerback free agent class wasn't stacked like it was, I don't think they would have had a problem bringing him back on maybe a 2-year deal or even a 1-year deal again and try that route. Because talking to a couple of coaches around the league, they felt he got better as the year went on and he got comfortable with the scheme. And, you know, I think he gained confidence as he is able to stay healthy. I mean, the previous year he played 11 games. The previous year before that he played 8 games. So, yeah, I'm sure his confidence grew as he is able to stay available.
Last one for you, Ryan, on Prince. Being with Jalen Ramsey, who's obviously a rookie, being with a team that's had a lot of young players, you're around that locker room every time. Anything you're able to tell us about Prince off the field in terms of was able to be a leader in that secondary? What was he like in that realm?
Well, he's a brilliant quote, and that's all that matters, right? I think he's won a Super Bowl. He's played playoff games, so I think from that, his resume would make him a leader. He's not afraid to point something out to the players, you know, speak up in the meeting room. So I think, you know, it's tough. It's tough, though, you know, when you're on a 1-year deal, how much of a leader can you really be? But I think he'll sort of push that aside, and I think he'll be a good addition for the Bears.
One more quick one, Ryan, actually, before we let you go, talking about one of the new Jaguars, and that being A.J. Bouye, because he was a player the Bears were reportedly interested in, maybe had gotten in a bit of a bidding war with the way Jacksonville signings went last offseason. Then obviously they weren't afraid to spend a lot of money this offseason. What's kind of the feeling in Jacksonville about bringing in Bouye?
Well, it was their top target, and it should have been. They needed somebody that could take some of the pressure off Ramsey on the other side, and also, you know, pay a little bit more to weaken a division rival. And you might say, well, the Jaguars have sucked for years. Who cares about the division rivals? Well, they don't think they do. So they wanted to hurt Houston and improve their defense. They feel he's an ascending player who's around the football a lot, which is what they need. They have their last in the NFL interception this past year. So Bouye was the big one. Campbell was a little bit of a bonus, even though it cost a ton of money. And then they needed to replace strong safety Jonathan Cyprian, so they signed Barry Church. So they did make some upgrades, but this team still has a long way to go. And the big thing is the players that have already been here, they need to get better or else none of this will matter.
Well, Ryan, one thing that you and I can agree on and talk about is the fans that read our stuff are much more interested in the things that happen between March and June sometimes than the stuff that happens in between September and December. Pretty busy times for teams like the Jaguars and the Bears. Thanks so much for giving us your time.
All right, take care now.
Big thank you to Ryan for that interview breaking down Prince. And, you know, I think when we get to Quentin Demps a little bit later in the show, there's going to be a theme in terms of guys added to the secondary that are veterans that can help a very young group not only create more production on the ball, but also just helping mentor these guys. And I think that's kind of what the Bears are hoping for a little bit out of Prince, but they certainly paid him like a starter as well as Marcus Cooper. So it makes you wonder a little bit about Tracy Porter might have to compete for his job. Both Cooper and Umo Kamara are getting paid more in 2017 than Tracy Porter. So kind of something to monitor. Let's jump ahead now to the offensive side of the ball for our next interview. The Bears obviously lost Alshon Jeffrey to the Eagles in free agency. You can't really replace Alshon Jeffrey, but they did add a speed element to their wide receiving core in Marcus Wheaton. So Jim Wexler, who's covered Marcus Wheaton and the Steelers for a long time, who's covered the Steelers for a long time, Marcus Wheaton, the last 4 years, joined us to break down the Bears' new receiver. Joining us now to talk about new Bears wide receiver Marcus Wheaton, it is Jim Wexel. You can follow him on Twitter at Jim Wexel. He covers the Steelers at their scout.com site, Steel City Insider, also a Pro Football Weekly contributor. Jim, when we look at Marcus Wheaton, before we talk about some of the injuries and the most recent stuff with him, I want to talk about 2014 and 2015 because I think those are the numbers and those are the that's the tape that Ryan Pace and the Bears probably watched. What made Marcus Wheaton so effective those two seasons?
Ben Roethlisberger? Marcus has been a perpetual tease. He's had his good games and he's had his bad games. He's had superior games. The Seattle Seahawks game in Seattle in 2015 is a game you want to look up. I'm pretty sure he had over 200 yards receiving. It was a great battle, epic battle, back and forth, and he was a key guy. But then he would disappear a bit. But we kind of wrote that off to youth. And he really never had a position. You know, the old flanker position was made more for, Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown, just opposite Antonio Brown. Antonio's not the great deep threat that people might think he is. They needed a deep threat opposite Antonio. And when Martavis Bryant came in, he was that guy. And Marcus wasn't that guy. And then Marcus moved into the slot where you would think he's built. But he was not really that shifty in there. He was not really in tune with the quarterback like he had to be. And when they got a slot receiver this year, Eli Rogers, who's not as talented as Marcus, but he understood the slot position better. He was more in tune with Ben. He could get open on those critical third and sevens, things like that in the middle of the field. Marcus was still learning the position. So, Marcus got a taste of all three positions, split end, flanker, and slot. And he wasn't a deep threat, but he wasn't slow. He's not big, but he's not small. There was nothing great about him, but there was nothing bad about him. I wanted him back. Well, personally, I want him back because he's a great guy. You'll find that out. Great guy. You know, these receivers are all divas anymore. This guy's not. And he lockered next to Ben. The team put him next to Ben so that they would mix and mesh and talk to each other, and they did. But it never seemed to pay off the way that relationship, the Steelers wanted that relationship to pay off. He wasn't really that fallback guy, that Hines Ward type of guy. You know, Antonio was the playmaker. They needed another guy to be the fallback guy, especially when Heath Miller left. And, you know, Marcus, while he knows the slot and he's confident in his slot ability, he's not a great slot receiver and he's not a great wide guy. But I wanted him back, not just for personal reasons, but for the team. I thought it would have been a good move. I thought they could get him cheap. And the Bears didn't get him cheap, not very cheap. I thought, you know, if Martavis Bryant doesn't make it back, this guy's your fallback, a veteran fallback that they missed in New England. You know, he was injured all last year. When they went to New England without Martavis Bryant, and they had the Kobe Hamilton and Sammy Coates with a broken hand, and, just a bunch of guys that were nobodies, really. Marcus could have been used in New England and as a veteran receiver. I mean, you know, they talk in baseball about just bring in a professional hitter. This team, all they need is a professional hitter. Well, this guy's a professional wide receiver. So in that regard, you got a good one. And from a character standpoint, you got a great one.
And Jim, you mentioned the money that the Bears gave him, and I was going to ask you about that. Obviously, you know, the Pittsburgh wasn't going to pay that, but the Bears clearly see upside. Is that something, as someone who's watched him play, that you see, even though the Bears certainly don't have Ben Roethlisberger and have quarterback questions of their own, is there enough in Marcus Wheaton that you've seen that you think he has some potential? He maybe hasn't reached his ceiling yet?
Right. I mean, as a writer, you have to stop writing
that this is going to be his breakout year, because I kept sensing that it was going to happen, and it could have happened this year. He made a great catch on a deep ball in a preseason game. He laid out a deep ball and caught it and landed on his shoulder, and that was it. And he tried to play. He really looked bad in some games. I saw him in practice really look bad. He couldn't catch the thing because his shoulder was bugging him so bad. And they still played him. And other report, we can't write what we see in practice, so I didn't write that he looked horrible. Other people were writing that, you know, how we cover practice, we have to ask a teammate, how did Marcus Wheaton look? Oh, Marcus looked great. Nobody's going to say Marcus stunk. You know, everybody liked Marcus. So, oh, Marcus looked fine. He's not. So that's what got written. I did not write that. A lot of these guys don't watch practice either. And I watched too closely. I knew he had a bad week. But the expectations of the fan base were such that everyone expected a big game out of, in the Eagles game. And he came out and dropped the easy touchdown pass to start the game. And everybody's, see, this guy's never going to make it. But I knew, I'm not saying I'm smarter than anybody, but I just knew that one thing, that he struggled all week in practice and his shoulder was killing him. And he would say to everybody, this is a rare guy that'll talk about his injuries because he's a nice guy. So he talked about his injuries and he was positive. They're all positive. No, it's going to pay off. I'm going to be fine this week. It's this problem and that problem, but I really feel it's going to pay off and I'm going to have a good game. And then he wouldn't, only because he talked brave and because he is a good guy. He talked about it at all. So all those things added up to just a miserable year for him. And then they finally put him on IR and they let these young guys have at it opposite Antonio Brown. I don't know. And I wrote this for Pro Football Weekly that I don't know how they made it as far as they did with all the attention Antonio Brown was getting by the end of the year, especially when Ladarius Green was out with his concussion. There were just no other receivers. Jesse James was adequate as a tight end. And Marcus Wheaton would have helped that immensely.
Yeah, one
but,
more.
For, yes. Yeah. I'm sorry. I keep talking too much. But like I said, I did see those flashes again this year. So it is possible that the Bears believe he can break out. And with his strong character and work ethic, it is possible.
Yeah, certainly that's what the Bears are hoping for. And we did remind Marcus at his press conference that the Bears are playing the Steelers this year in Chicago. So he'll get a chance to face his former team, maybe show them what he could have been or maybe show them what they kind of thought he was. Jim Wexel, you can follow him on Twitter at Jim Wexel. Check out his stuff at Steel City Insider at scout.com as well as on our parent website, Pro Football Weekly. Jim, thanks for all the insight on Marcus Wheaton.
Great, Kevin. I'm glad I could help.
Thank you to Jim, who does great work covering the Pittsburgh Steelers. And interesting stuff on Wheaton, who has certainly kind of teased, as he said, Steeler Nation over the years. And certainly fantasy football players in 2014, 2015, some days you get big games from him, some days you don't. So certainly someone that still has potential. And let's see how the Bears use him, how he works with Cameron Meredith and Kevin White. Like the corners getting paid to kind of be out there a lot. So he's going to be a key player for this offense. Let's stay on the offense. Let's stay at wide receiver and talk about another guy the Bears brought in to maybe play the slot, and that is Kendall Wright. And Terry McCormick covered Kendall Wright with the Titans for TitanInsider.com, and he talked to us a little bit about the Bears' new slot man. We're now joined by Terry McCormick, who covers the Titans for TitanInsider.com. You can follow him on Twitter at TerryMC13. He also contributes to the Pro Football Weekly annual magazine. And Terry, on to introduce Bears fans a little bit to Kendall Wright. And Terry, before we get into the player Kendall Wright was the last couple seasons, I think Bears fans are very interested in the Kendall Wright you saw in 2012 and 2013, especially 2013, when Dow Loggins was the Titans offense coordinator. What allowed Kendall to be so productive, you think, those two seasons?
Well, I think the main thing was that Dow Loggins put Kendall Wright in position to do do what he does best. Kendall Wright is really almost a freelance type of guy, if you will. A Dowell Loggins had a lot of option routes, things like that, where it's up to the quarterback and the receiver to make the read on the defensive back and adjust the route accordingly. And I think, you know, that's what worked for best for him. And you got to remember that in 2012, 2013, when Kendall Wright had his best season, you know, it was Jake Locker and Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing him the football. So, you know, not exactly the same type of quarterback that it was when Marcus Mariota was throwing him the ball the last couple of years. And, you know, and he struggled not because of the quarterback, but because of the system that he was in, just didn't seem to fit his skill set.
When did you kind of mark maybe the beginning of the end? Was it the coaching change? Was there some kind of flashpoint that kind of told everyone that this just wasn't working for Kendall Wright and the Titans?
Well, I think we kind of saw it coming at the end of the 2015 season. And then last year, once he was ticketed for the slot, you know, he seemed, you know, on board with that, seemed okay with it. Then he suffered a hamstring injury I think it was like August the 1st. And the injury was very nagging, very lingering, and kept him out even out of the season opener in the first week or two of games. So it was about a 6 or 7 week injury in what the Titans felt like probably should have been about a 2 or 3 week injury. And so Kendall Wright just kind of got off on the wrong foot. And later on, there were things like being late for a meeting. But just when you thought that you were about to write Kendall Wright off, you know, there he was celebrating with Mike Mularkey when the Ryan Succop made that game-winning field goal to beat Kansas City in the cold weather out there in December to keep the Titans' playoff hopes alive. So Kendall Wright was kind of an enigmatic guy, I guess, if you want to say that. You know, it was, seemed like at times it almost looked like he had checked out on the team, and then at other times, you know, it seemed he was happy to be a part of things. And I think a happy and motivated Kendall Wright, which, you know, he may find himself again under Dowell Loggins, can be a very productive Kendall Wright.
And you kind of talked earlier about some of those option routes, some of the things he does well. What else in his skill set really stood out to you during his 5 seasons with Titans?
Well, I think the fact that he's not so much a burner as he is kind of quick and shifty. He's a guy who can get into the open field and make people miss when he's on his game. You know, he's not going to electrify you with a 4.25 or anything like that in the 40, but the, you know, the high 4.4s or the low 4.5s, he's going to run it with a very shifty running style that's going to allow him to get separation and get open. I think, you know, Kendall Wright has the potential to still be a very effective wide receiver in this league. He just needs to find the right system and the right, way to showcase his skill set. And I think probably going back with Dowell Loggins is going to be his best shot at that. It'll be interesting to see how well and how quickly he can get on the same page with the quarterback, Mike Glennon.
And last one for you, Terry. I'm just kind of curious what kind of Titans fans and people who observe this team, what their thought was on Kendall Wright. Because on the one hand, they saw the drop-off in production and maybe saw some question about attitude. But the way you're kind of talking about him, he's also someone that I think people understand has some potential. So, I mean, are Titans fans or people around Tennessee kind of bummed to see him move on and maybe nervous to see what he can do with Dowell Loggins? Or did everyone around Nashville kind of understand what was coming and this just wasn't the right system for Kendall Wright?
Well, I think they knew that, you know, he was going to move on. He said as much at the end of the year that it was time for him to go somewhere where he could, you know, get a fresh start and get into a system that worked for him. I think, you know, the one thing about Titans fans, when it comes to the wide receiver position, they're used to guys being disappointments. Kenny Britt, Justin Hunter, Tyrone Calico, Doriel Green Beckham, you know, you can add now Kendall Wright to that list. They're used to guys not being very good here and then moving on somewhere else sometimes to find success. So I think just another in a long line of guys who flash skills occasionally here but didn't sustain it for the long haul.
Well, the Bears gave Kendall Wright only a 1-year deal, but a decent amount of money in that 1-year deal. So they are certainly banking on the reunion with Dowell Loggins working out well for them. This has been Terry McCormick joining us on the program to talk about Kendall Wright. You can see his work at TitanInsider.com and follow him on Twitter at TerryMC13. Terry, thanks so much for the insight and the time.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you to Terry, and you can read Terry's Titans preview in the Pro Football Weekly season preview coming out later this spring and summer, like a lot of our guests on this program. It's, you know, the big thing with Kendall Wright that you're going to hear a lot about is what he did with Dow Loggins, and that'll be a theme throughout. We'll probably talk to Dow for probably it's still 2 months away. We're going to talk to the Bears offensive coordinator about reuniting with Kendall Wright. Let's flip back to the secondary, defensive side of the ball. The second big signing after Mike Glennon for the Bears was Quinton Demps, Texans safety. Big in terms of ball production, lots of questions about his age, but he is looks like he's going to be one of the Bears' starting safeties for 2017. And the voice of the Texans, Mark Vandermeer, joined us to break down Quinton Demps. Continuing on our podcast today, we are joined by the voice of the Houston Texans, Mark Vandermeer. You can follow him on Twitter at Texans Voice. He's going to talk to us a little bit about the Bears' new starting safety, Quinton Demps. And Mark, Quinton Demps had two times he's played with the Texans. How big of a difference was it, the Quinton Demps you saw 2010 to 2012 that the Texans had and the one from the past two seasons?
Well, that's a great question. I think he played well the first time around. You know, they needed a lot of help. They were having a lot of injuries, and he came in and really helped them out. And, you know, you look at his career, and I know you've been doing a lot of research on him, and it's pretty interesting to see his journey in this league. I mean, I think he's done very well for himself when you consider the stops that he's made. He had a couple of picks the first time around and around a three-year visit with the Texans, really more like two-plus, if you will, but then he went to Kansas City and the Giants. And when he came back, you know, I think they were hurting for some veteran leadership and some solid play, let's be honest. And he led the team in interceptions this year. He had six grabs, some of those off deflections and everything, but he was in the right place, right time. And I think, again, you know, having a vet like that in a group that I always think the defensive backs are the second tightest group on the team. I think it's O-line, then defensive backs. But I'll tell you what, this defensive backs group here in Houston is as tight as I've ever seen. The current, well, 2016 version, because we all know it changes every year. That version of defensive backs for this franchise, it's the tightest I've ever seen here. And he was obviously a big part of that.
And that's one of the reasons that the Bears brought him in. It's one of the things he said he's going to bring to Chicago is that leadership. It's an extremely young safeties group here. So being around that team, being so close to them, I mean, what kind of things did you see from Quinton Demps that would kind of reflect what kind of leader he was for that Texans team? Because when you think of that Texans defense, Mark, that's not the first name you think of when you think of some of the leaders. But what kind of did you see from him?
Well, I think when you look at him, I like guys like that who have been at various stops because they understand that, you know, it's not forever in this league. Now, he was drafted in the fourth round originally by the Philadelphia Eagles, but a fourth round draft choice, as we all know, is hardly a lock for a long career in the NFL. And then when you think about, you know, having played, you know, for the Hartford Colonels and, you know, done stuff like that, he has an appreciation of being part of an NFL roster and being part of an NFL roster, especially that has challenged for the playoffs and made the playoffs the last couple of years here. So when you look at the year that, say, an A.J. Boye had for the Texans at cornerback, and he just signed a nice deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, Boye, undrafted guy, can always lean on a guy like Quinton Demps. And I'm not saying this specifically, but, you know, just the mere presence of him and just having him around. I mean, being able to bounce stuff off of a guy like that who was a fourth-round pick and has been able to hang on various NFL franchises and make a contribution and just stay in the league for as long as he had because, you know, the vast majority of players in this league don't last. But he's been able to last because he works hard and he's got a great attitude and he keeps pressing.
On the field, you know, everyone in Chicago is raving about the ball skills that Quinton Demps has. And this is something he's had back going back to college. In terms of just being able to get so many interceptions and make so many plays in the ball, what do you think kind of attributed that ability that he showed for that secondary?
Well, you know, ball skills are one thing, but I think that some of the older guys, I tend to notice this about the older, or they tend to have this, the older guys in the league who have stuck around a little bit longer on the defensive side of the ball, you know, they might not be as quick as they were early. And I'm not saying this is the case with him, but they know where to go. They know where the ball is going. You know, they've just seen so many different circumstances in this league, so many different plays. Remember Ray Lewis, and I'm not comparing Demps to Ray Lewis, but remember Ray Lewis late in his career still found a way to make plays even when he couldn't run hardly as well as he could earlier. He knew what was happening. He knew where the ball was going. I think Demps has some of that as a safety, which obviously you need anyway, but that's just something that, you know, you have some instincts, obviously, at the position. Ball skills are sometimes God-given, but guys work on them. But the ability to know where the ball might be going in the air, and, you know, that deflected pass, hey, I'm here because I was playing safety. I was the next level of defense, and the ball got deflected. I happen to be here, able to make an interception. You know, a lot of guys wouldn't be in that right spot, but he's in that correct spot because he knows, he's got the experience, and he's able to capitalize with that.
And last thing, Mark, on that, and you talk about those instincts, and I think that's what allows a player like Quentin Demps to play as long as he does. But the thing that a lot of Bears fans and observers noticed, of course, he turns 32 in June. We talked to him about it at his press conference. He said age is just a number. Obviously, not a lot of tread on those tires because he didn't play a ton his first few years. But when you watched him last year, especially with some different young guys and a mix of young guys and veterans in that Texans team, did you see something that would tell you, like, this guy is towards the tail end of his career? Or did you see someone that still has a lot of potential and maybe still has some upside there?
Well, if you didn't know the age, you wouldn't say, oh, yeah, that's an older player. I mean, you might say that's an older player just based on the fact that he's experienced. And again, like I said, he knows where to go. But I would say that, you know, you're right that he's probably got plenty left and they've done their research and everything. For whatever reason, he didn't fit into the plans here moving forward. And I think this team, you know, has other issues as far as budget goes and, you know, how they want to allot their assets and all of that. But, you know, and we all know it doesn't last forever. And when it goes, it can go sometimes very quickly. And I think that's the risk that any team, and I'm not saying this is going to be the case with Quentin, but any team signing an older player, and 32 is definitely on the wrong side of 30, as we all know, they take that risk and they understand that risk. But, I think there's plenty left to help the Chicago Bears here for Quentin Demps. I mean, in my, you know, layman's opinion, if you will, of the situation, you know, again, you're not going to find a guy who works a lot harder than Quentin Demps. I mean, this guy's going to put the effort in, and I'm sure that he wants to live up to what Chicago rewarded him with.
Well, he comes into Chicago, Mark, as probably the best safety in the room and maybe one of the more accomplished ones this team's had in a while when it comes to taking the ball away. So they obviously hope he can continue that in Chicago. Mark Vandermeer, play-by-play voice of the Houston Texans. You can follow him on Twitter at TexansVoice. Breaking it down on Quentin Demps. Mark, thanks so much for your time.
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you to Mark, who was on our program before week one, previewing that Bears-Texans game. It's amazing how much this Bears team has changed since prior to that game when we were previewing what Jay Cutler and Alshon Jeffrey could do against that Texans defense. And now we're talking about Mike Glennon and Kendall Wright and Marcus Wheaton and Quentin Demps and the 2017 Chicago Bears. And we wrap up our interviews on the Getting to Know the New Bears podcast talking about tight end Deion Sims, who looks like he will be right there with Zach Miller, work in the middle of the field, good blocker, Michigan State, Midwest guy. And Omar Kelly covers Dolphins for the South Florida Sun Sentinel, has covered Deion Sims the last four seasons, and Omar joined us to break down the Bears' new tight end. Joining me now to talk about the new Bears tight end is Dolphins beat writer Omar Kelly from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. You can follow him on Twitter at Omar Kelly, which I highly recommend. Omar is a very entertaining follow, and he certainly knows his football and his Dolphins. Omar, before we talk about how Deion Sims has progressed a little bit and getting his background, I'm curious just his blocking. How would you rate Deion Sims as a blocker?
I think he's way above average compared to what the new tight ends are. I would say he clearly can block better than everybody in the draft except for O.J. Howard. Blocking is his forte, but I think he's an underrated pass catcher. I mean, we're talking about a guy who was like, I think he was Michigan's Mr. Basketball or a contender for Michigan's Mr. Basketball. So he has a ton of athleticism. He's got decent hands. But I think the best attribute about him as a player is that he's a very good inline blocker.
And with his blocking and his receiving, how have you seen him grow since 2013 when he first started?
You know, he started some games as a rookie, primarily as the inline blocker. And I could tell you, he hasn't grown and developed at the pace that I would have hoped for him, because I thought he would be a frontline starter. I thought when they moved on from Charles Clay, I really thought that Deion Sims was going to elevate his game and become a starter and become a 40 reception, 6 touchdowns type of tight end. But it never really blossomed for him for a number of reasons. The Dolphins, they went out and they got Jordan Cameron. Not to say that that went well, but they didn't really give Deion Sims an opportunity to play on a consistent basis and show what he can do. And that's a little bit disappointing, but I can understand exactly why they did it. They weren't confident that he was going to continue to consistently develop. And I would say he's fallen short of my expectations, but I think there's still a lot of potential there.
Last season, when Jordan Cameron was out for most of the year, was he playing a lot more snaps than usual? And how did he kind of take into that role as maybe being more of a prominent guy?
You know, coincidentally, when Jordan Cameron suffered his concussion, I believe Deion Jordan suffered it like a week later. So the Dolphins had to play, I think, at least 3 games with their 3rd-string and 4th-string tight end. But when Deion came back, they didn't try to put too much on his plate, too much on his workload, because concussions are an issue for him. He's missed games with concussions the last 2 seasons. But he eventually, at the end of the season, really started to take off, really started to contribute more, got a better understanding and grasp of the offense. And to me, it's going to take time for him to get adjusted in Chicago. It's going to take time for him to develop chemistry with whoever is their quarterback. God, I hope it's not Mike Glennon. I think he will take off. I really do believe he'll either be a guy who's in the league for 10 years or he'll be a frontline guy like Martellus Bennett, one or the other. But I don't think he's just going to just be a guy who blends in.
How much did the Dolphins want to keep Deion Sims?
Oh, they did. It was a priority of theirs, but they weren't willing to give them the money that the Chicago Bears were willing to give. Chicago clearly viewed him as a starter, or a potential starter. And the Dolphins were willing to give him a multi-year deal at probably $3 million a year, but they weren't really to make that kind of commitment to him, especially with Julius Thomas here.
Omar, one more before we let you go. Just because we got a lot of Bears fans listening, everyone's wondering, how has Miami embraced Adam Gase there after his first year of head coach?
Adam Gase is the king of South Florida right now, probably just under Eric Spoelstra, who's had a tremendous turnaround with the Heat. But he's got a way with his players. He's got an alpha male personality. He's aggressive. And that's one of the things that's really encouraging and one of the things that players really buy into. Now, he won his first season, and it'll be interesting to see how his personality changes if he doesn't go to the playoffs or doesn't produce a 10-6 record. But I think he's a very young, talented coach, and as long as the offense, as long as the defense is in good hands, I think you should have a very good team with the Miami Dolphins in the coming years.
Well, Bears fans
not
do.
Patriots keep, good, but still good.
Well, Bears fans do keep a pretty close eye on Adam Gase. I think a lot of Bears fans wonder what if with Adam Gase. But good to see him doing well in Miami. Omar Kelly, South Florida Sun Sentinel, Dolphins beat writer. Follow him on Twitter at Omar Kelly. Thanks so much for all the insight on Deion Sims.
All right, no problem, Kevin.
That was Omar Kelly. Again, really good follow on Twitter for those of you who are just football fans, or if you do like the Dolphins or like Adam Gase. Very entertaining follow. And interesting stuff about Deion Sims, because we're going to get into some of these contracts now as my producer John Solly joins me. And Deion Sims got starters money. Deion Sims is going to be making more than Zach Miller next year. Marcus Cooper, Prince, and Mukamara are going to be making more than Tracy Porter is next season. Marcus Wheaton and Kendall Wright are making pretty good money next season. They'll actually be the highest paid receivers on the team after they, you know, we expect them to release Eddie Royal at some point. So, John, the Bears signed a lot of guys to starter contracts, but and guys who were starters last year, but these guys are not necessarily full-time starting players.
Yeah, and the one I'm most intrigued by there is at the corner situation. Because with Deion Sims, you know, yeah, he's making more than Zach Miller, but is Zach Miller going to see the field? The wide receivers, well, who the heck else do you really have? Cam Meredith and Kevin White are still in rookie deals. So the corner thing I'm interested in is Tracy Porter legitimately in trouble and losing his number one starting corner job just based off salary?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a read the tea leaves situation here. You look at, he doesn't have any guaranteed money left. You bring in Cooper and Mukamara. I mean, this is another big thing. Let's see what they do at cornerback in the draft. They like Cravon LeBlanc. They like DeAndre Hall. They like Bryce Callahan. There's a lot of bodies there, not a lot of playing time to go around. It would be unfortunate, I think, selfishly, for Tracy Porter to go and continue the media good guy curse that four years right. in a row, the winner of the media good guy award is not on the team the next season. But you know, you look at his age, you look at some of the injury history. Although, I mean, the guy played every game last year. He was good last year. That corner spot is going to be very interesting. And I think you heard Ryan O'Halloran talk about Prince Amukamara earlier on the show. Solid guy. He's not going to necessarily give up big plays, but necessarily going to make big plays. We didn't get a chance to talk to any Cardinals writers about Marcus Cooper, but I loved what Bruce Arians said about the guy at the Combine. I mean, he went out of his way to talk about how good Marcus Cooper was and going after the football, and he kind of stepped into a starter's role. So that's somebody that, you know, that's the Bears are signing with, you know, thinking upside. And you know, this is the thing too, the Bears are taking chances on guys who have not been full-time starters. Like, all right, you played well last year or the last 2 years, we're going to reward you and see if you can be that guy for us. But I do think John and other writers have talked about this. I think free agency has been a big reminder too of how important the draft is going to be for the Bears. Because if the Bears make the playoffs, it's not going to be because of Marcus Wheaton necessarily. It might be because of the number three pick who have maybe is a safety or a corner or a defensive lineman. I mean, this is still a team that wants to build through the draft. They didn't throw a ton of money at these guys. And it's not really that big of a deal that they maybe paid some players more than their market value because they have the salary cap space. You might as well spend the money.
Let's also not forget that these are who the players that the Bears could sign. I mean, the perception of the Bears at Halas Hall, I think, is a little different than what reality actually bore out throughout free agency. They went after some big names and could not land any of them. And so these are the guys. They paid these guys, you know, maybe more than market value, but this is who they could sign, and they do have an incredible amount of cap room.
I do agree with that. I will point out, though, that when A.J. Bouye goes to the Jaguars for more money, I think he'd go to the Jaguars because there's no more money and he wants in the state of Florida. I don't think it's an indictment on where the Bears are, because you can't necessarily say that the Jaguars are that much better shape than the Bears right now in terms of being as a franchise.
Yeah.
So I think that's I understand that, you know, the Bears might not be a sexy destination, but I'm also of the belief that these guys are going to go where the money is and the opportunity to start.
And
so,
no state income tax.
Yes. I guess I don't know for sure, but I imagine if the Bears offered, you know, some of these guys more money than they got, then they would have a good side. I think Gilmore might be an exception because it's the Patriots, but he also got a ton of money to go to New England.
Yeah, so, I wouldn't have been comfortable with the amount of money that the Patriots gave him.
And I wouldn't be comfortable with the amount of money that, because then the Bears would sign somebody who blocked me on Twitter.
That's right. He didn't like your column.
I don't know. My column was more making fun of the Bills, if anything.
He took it personal.
I guess so. Jeez. That was kind of weird. But that's kind of where the Bears stand after about one full week of free agency. The big moves are done. Alshon Jeffrey's an Eagle. Bears are going to play him next year. 1 year deal, betting on himself. It's an interesting move by Alshon Jeffrey. Probably cost himself, I don't know, at least $10 million guaranteed that he could have gotten a multi-year deal, but he could set himself up for $40 million guaranteed next offseason if he plays well. So I can see why he did that, but it puts a lot of pressure on Kevin White. Which is why I like the additions of Marcus Wheaton and Kendall Wright. Just gives the Bears just more veteran bodies there. They just didn't have enough of those the last 2 years at the receiver position. Cornelius Washington signs in Detroit. obviously Jay Cutler released. My favorite trivia now, John, is that Sherrick McManus, Go Cats, is the longest tenured Bear going back to 2012.
Wow.
And soon there's going to be nobody left from the 2013 draft class except for Kyle Long if the Bears don't re-sign Marquise Wilson.
Wow. One great pick at the top of that draft class.
And you know what? Phil Emery should get some credit here because that 2013 draft was bad.
Yes.
And the Bears got maybe one of the best value picks in the draft, getting Kyle Long where they did. He's a 3-time Pro Bowler with more Pro Bowls to come.
True.
So let's give Phil some credit for that. So the Bears had a pretty frenetic first 24, 48 hours of free agency with Cutler, Jeffrey, Glennon, Demps, Wheaton, and then obviously kind of adding Wright over the weekend. Tom Compton, a swing tackle for them as well. But, you know, you're not going to hear any more big names as we go through leading into the draft. And in the next couple of weeks, John, we'll start focusing in on the draft and who the Bears are going to take number 3 overall.
And
I don't know if their moves rule out corner as an option at the at the early pick. I think certainly they didn't do anything on the defensive line, so that's an option. Safety remains an option, and you can't rule out quarterback. I think they should absolutely take quarterback in the first 3 rounds. I think pretty much everything remains on the table. I would imagine the only thing they wouldn't spend a first or second round pick on, it would be wide receiver in terms of some of the recent positional needs. I think they at least covered some of wide receiver with free agency, getting Wright and Wheaton. They at least have bodies there. Now, if they think they need to go get a stud, then go, I guess. But, you know, that would be maybe a bit of a luxury move at this point. But we'll start talking draft when we get into April. I'm going to go on vacation next week, John, if that's okay with you.
I mean, I guess. I don't know what our podcast listeners are going to do.
They'll, you know, they can re-listen. I would say go back and listen to last week's episode with Roy Cummings talking about Mike Glennon. Go back to last year. You know, this time we had some good podcasts, Pat Manley, Jarrett Payton, Desmond Borges. I mean, these are some evergreen podcasts. Just go through the Pro Football Weekly Chicago Football Archive. Find some good podcasts. And you know what? Go ahead and subscribe on there and give us a rating while you're at it. Be back the last week of March, first week of April, and we'll start previewing the NFL draft and taking a closer look at some of the guys that the Bears could target at the number 3 pick overall. All right, some big thank yous to hand out. First of all, to the listener. And we had 5 interviews on today's show. So let's thank everyone. That would be Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union, Jim Wexel of Steel City Insider on Scout.com, Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com, Mark Vandermeer, the voice of the Texans, and Omar Kelly of the South Florida Sun Sentinel. John Solly, you are a hero, a gentleman, and a scholar for producing this episode and putting it all together. So thank you.
Go Cats.
Go Cats. NCAA tournament coming up. Enjoy the March Madness. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. Stick to profootballweekly.com/Bears for all of your Bears coverage and Bears_insider on Twitter. See who else the Bears pick up in free agency, and we'll start talking about the draft next week.